I'm Jeff Schwain. I'm 74 years old. Today's date is March 10th, 2020. I'm in Las Cruces, New Mexico. I'm interviewing Ben Bell, and he's my friend.
I'm Ben Bell, age 87, and March the 10th, 2020. I live in Las Cruces, New Mexico, and been interviewed by Jeff, and we're just friends.
Ben, can you tell me a little bit about where you grew up and what that was like?
I grew up in a North Ranch, and that's about it. I can't understand why I'm choking up, but then went to a boys' home.
Where was the orphanage and boys' home? Where was it located?
Pineville, Louisiana.
Okay, so you grew up in Louisiana.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any memories that stand out from your childhood, positive things that happened to you that you remember?
Well, the only thing I can think of, I had a good life. Discipline, a lot of discipline. And it was just a good life.
Can you remember who some important people were in your childhood?
Not really. Maybe a couple of nuns.
Okay.
But we have to go way back there, and I don't remember any out of the ordinary. Just the one nun was real good to me.
So you were in a Catholic orphanage, correct?
Yes.
Okay. What are some important lessons you've learned in life?
I guess to be good to people. And treat everybody right.
Are there some things in your life that you're particularly proud of?
I can't think of any.
Some kind of work or...
Well, I liked my job.
And what did you do?
I've done a lot of things. I was a salesman when I first started out. And... went into different, selling fuller brush, vacuum cleaners, and then from there went into selling janitorial supplies. And from there, I went into pipe fitting. Traveled all over, working on nuclear power plants. That's about it.
Okay. Has your life turned out different than what you imagined it would be when you were younger?
Very different.
How so?
I've never thought about what my life was going to be, so it didn't fit in. So to speak, that I would end up this way.
How do you mean, didn't fit?
Well, I didn't know what a family was, and I had brothers and sisters, but we weren't close like brothers and sisters because I was away.
So what year did you go into the service, and which branch did you go into?
I went into the Army in 1952, in the Army.
Did you volunteer, or were you drafted?
I was drafted.
What do you remember about the day you enlisted or swore the oath when you joined the Army?
You're saying to me, what do I remember about that date?
Yes.
Nothing in particular, except I knew that what I got drafted for, that I had to go to the Far East.
How did you imagine military life would be before you joined?
I never had a problem with that because I was raised in a type of military situation. Regimental all the time.
So it wasn't much different in the military. Tell me a little bit about what basic training was like for you after you joined the Army.
Well, basic training was a little different than I expected it to be, but it prepared me for what I had to do.
Do you remember any humorous incidents from basic training that kind of stick with you?
No, it was all misery. It was all misery.
Okay. What are some of the things you remember about adapting to military life? Were there any challenges or... you mentioned before the regimentation wasn't much different, but was there some other things about military life that were peculiar?
Let me back up
to
that other question that you had. In basic training, we had guys that didn't want to go through basic training. So what we had to do is we had to guard them every day. Well, my day came and to guard them. And they gave me a shotgun. They said, if they escape, you're going to do their time. So I told them, I said, I don't think I'll have anybody escape. And they told me to shoot him in the leg. So when I take him out and we're going through training, and one of them said to me, he said, would you shoot me if I took off? I said, I wouldn't do that today because I'm not going to shoot you in the leg, because if you get away and I miss, I got to do your time, and I'm not going to do your time, so don't run today because I will shoot you. That's just the way it was.
Okay. Do you remember finding out where you were going to be sent after basic training? Do you remember?
Oh, yes. They gave us orders to ship us to the Far East, and I knew that was the end of the line.
In what sense?
Well... I wasn't going to, I knew that I wasn't going to get good duty. I knew I was going into a combat zone. And that didn't set too good. But yeah, I just went. I did what I'm supposed to do.
You followed orders.
Yeah, I was young, didn't. That's why we fight wars with young men.
Because they follow orders more easily?
Yeah.
Okay. And where did you serve in the war?
In the infantry.
Okay. And which war?
Korean War.
And when you traveled to Korea, how did you get there?
I got there by a troop ship, and we hit the tail end of the Pacific. I mean, on the Pacific, we hit the tail end of a typhoon, and I thought the ship was going to sink because the screws would come up out of the water and it would just vibrate. Wells would pop. And that's the way it was. And then we landed in Japan. That was our first deal. And then we got all the gear for combat. Rifle, ammo. They only gave us 3 rounds to get our weapon sighted, and I thought that was kind of unusual. You know, what if it doesn't come in? You're just stuck with a rifle that don't shoot straight.
So did you get yours sighted in?
I got mine sighted in, yes.
Okay. Maybe because it was late in the war, they were running out of ammunition or having to manage it a little better? I don't know.
Well, no, it's just the way the Army operates. You know, somebody decided, well, we just gonna give them 3 rounds and that's it. And if they have a problem with that, too bad.
And how did you get from Japan to Korea then?
On another ship.
Okay.
We got on another ship and then...
No typhoon this time, though.
Huh? No. And I said, I made a vow that I would never get on another ship. I didn't know how I would get home, but I wasn't going to go get it on another ship.
That was it, huh?
That was it.
When you got to sent to Korea, did you let your family know that you were going to go there, or? Any relatives know you were?
I wrote to my sister. Well, I didn't know that. I assumed that we were going to Korea because that's where the action was. But it did not say on the orders that it was Korea. It said the Far East. And I really didn't know until I got into Korea that I had to write and tell them where I was.
Okay. So once you got to Korea, how long before you were sent up to the lines, the front lines?
We went probably maybe a day and a half before we had to I'll take that back. We went, probably took us maybe 5 days to get to the front. And in the meantime, we seen the Korean, the children and everything chasing the train and just begging for food.
They were starving?
Oh, yeah.
So you went by train up to the front then, right?
Yeah. Well, close. Mm-hmm. Close to the front with the train. But then we had to get out and march to up to the front.
What was that like? What was your first impression as you got off the train and were hiking up to the front? I mean, what did you notice? What was...
Well, you could notice that there was hardly any vegetation. Trees were non-existent. Explosion just tore them up. And it was cold. It was cold over there.
What time of year was it, do you think, when you went up to the front lines?
In I can't remember.
Winter, fall.
It was the last of the the fall between winter and fall.
November, December, somewhere in there. It's at the beginning of winter, right?
Well, no, it was the end of winter.
Oh, okay, towards spring. Okay.
Yeah,
so
spring.
When you got to the front lines, what do you remember about that in terms of getting yourself situated up there?
Well, I remember it was kind of funny because as soon as we got up to the front, it was kind of late. And they said, okay, you got to dig in. Well, I started digging in, but it wasn't, I guess I thought it was, kind of like a joke. You weren't really, I wasn't scared then. And then they come down and they said, Bill, you didn't get deep enough. I said, we aren't going to be here very long. So, he said, you're going to be here a while. So you better dig that hole so you can cover yourself without getting your head out of it. I thought, my goodness, this is a lot of digging. And you had a little entrenching tool to... But I really didn't dig it that deep because you can't dig too good in that soil with an entrenching tool. And it was just, you could lay down in it and that would protect you, but that's just about what I dug until they started shelling us and then you dug a little deeper.
More motivation, huh?
Yeah.
So how long were you on the front lines when you went up there?
Well, I was on the front line for probably a couple of weeks. And then they draw us back for a rest. And that's where they operated. You'd spend so much time on the front line, and then they'd bring you back for a rest.
How about making friends when you were up there on the front lines? Did you have?
Oh yeah, you made friends. Yeah, you made friends because you had to trust people. And that's how I took a bad habit of overseas with my best friend there, that he smoked, and I never smoked. And he told me, he seen that I was nervous, and I was scared. And he said, here, have a cigarette. I said, I don't smoke. He said, I know, but this will calm you down. Lit my first cigarette, never quit.
So it did calm you down, huh?
Yeah, it did calm me down.
Did anything on the front lines happen that were that was funny or unusual, or you and your friends might have done things to lighten the atmosphere up there if you weren't having to be on total alert? I mean, would you kid each other or?
Well, that's a big part of it, because if you didn't do that, you would lose it. You just had to laugh, tell jokes, talk about home, all that kind of stuff.
Would you have nicknames for some of your friends on the front lines? And
we had a nickname for the lieutenant that trained us. We called him Slewfoot.
How come?
Well, he just walked funny, but the main reason was he just didn't carry himself right, like a soldier. And he taught mortar and how to drop a rocket in the tube, but if it didn't go off, you were told not to look down that tube because it would probably go off a little later. So what you did, you didn't kick it and look down the tube. So we knew, we got that through our head. And that you supposed to take it after a while when you feel the tube to see if it's hot. And then you tilt the tube and hold your hand to catch that rocket when it slides out the front that you put it in.
That's how you get it out if it's a dud or you think it's a dud.
Yeah.
So this training would happen up on close to the front lines, they would show you this? Or
no,
you
this
back?
Was in basic training.
Oh, basic training.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're slipping back to basic training.
All right. I wonder whatever happened to that guy.
Well, I guess that's why we all called him Slewfoot. He was a different type of guy. And what he did, he went against all rules. They had a hang fire in basic training. And my buddy wrote me and told me this, because he was in basic training at the time. He said, old Slewfoot kicked that tube and looked down the tube. He said, he's no longer with us.
So he got
just the type of guy he was.
He got blown to bits, huh?
Yes.
Wow. How about on the front line with your the other privates you were with, and that did you have anybody up there that had a nickname or that were kind of comedians or funny guys or?
I had but he didn't have a nickname. He was from New York. He was a philosopher. He carried two books constantly with him. But he was good guy. He's straight. Didn't take any guff or nothing. He just was a quiet guy, but very serious.
So people couldn't push him around or?
No, there was no. There was one deal that we were eating, it was chow time, and they had brought up hot food to us in a Jeep. And we'd all look at that Jeep coming down the road, and the enemy had the high ground, and they would see if they could knock this Jeep off. And they swerving and everything to get over. And they finally got the food up there, and it was raining, and my friend, the philosopher, he would take his food and spoon it out and throw it on the ground. And it was just miserable. The rain was getting in your food. And the lieutenant come by and he said, soldier, you don't like the Army? He said, no. He didn't say, sir. He never looked up. Never looked up. He said, I don't like the Army, and I don't like you waving that flag in front of me, because we didn't have the American flag. We had the United Nations flag. So he told him that, and he said, you know who you're talking to? He said, yes, I know who I'm talking. He never looked up. He said, I forget what it transpired there, but something, he didn't say it right or call him sir. And the lieutenant says, I can have you court-martial for that. He said, no, you can't. He said, yes, I can have you court-martial. And what makes you think I can't court-martial you? He said, you won't get 6 foot down the road, and I will shoot you. Up on the front line, you got a weapon all the time. You can't be on the front line without a weapon.
Yeah.
So, lieutenant just walked on the way, and I looked at him and I said, would you have shot the man? He said, I think I would have. He wasn't going to court-martial me. Well, but that's just the way things are. It's a bad situation to be in.
Yeah. Lots of different things go down that most people don't know about when you're
that's
in that
true.
Situation. Yeah. What I know you've talked about another troop of yours that served with you on the front lines who was nicknamed Dakota. You remember that guy?
Oh, yeah, Dakota. Yeah, he said we got hit.
Why did they call him Dakota first of all?
Because he was from North Dakota.
Okay.
Yeah, and he, we got under pressure from a machine gun, and it pinned us down. I didn't have any idea how to get rid of this gunner. And Dakota's right next to me, and I said, Dakota, I said, you believe that you're not going to go until it's your time? Because he always told me, you're not going to go until it's your time. I said, so why don't you go get that guy? He looked at me just as serious as could be. He said, no. No, I said, no, I was just joking. I said, no, you're not going to go. We'll find another way to get him. But, just don't get out of the hole and go up and charge him because you're going to get killed. But we had a big laugh about that.
Because of his philosophy, right?
Yeah, because I told him about his philosophy. You're not going to go until it's your time. So go get him.
Because it's not your time, right?
Yeah. But that was, when you mention it, then it brings back things to me, and that I've forgotten. It, just sitting here, I can't think of all the everything, just like the deal with the tank. We were in the position, on the front line. And it was cold. And a tank pulls up, and it was dark. Well, we were sleeping, but in a foxhole. And the tank, he shut the motor off. And I thought, that's kind of unusual. They're here. He's here. So it got quiet, and then I climbed up on the tank to get warm. And I laid there, and I'm going to sleep because it was nice and warm on that hot motor. And all of a sudden I heard on the inside a noise. I knew what it was. I said, he's loading that 90 millimeter. I said, I got to get off of this tank. So I stood up and was trying to find a place to jump. And he fired that weapon. And it knocked me off of that tank. And I hit my back on the tank. But I knew that I hurt it pretty bad. But in combat, you don't. The only way you're going to get evacuated or pulled off of the front line is if blood is coming off of you.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no blood, and you just don't. There ain't no place to go.
So the recoil from the cannon shot knocked you off the tank.
Oh yeah, it got a terrible. I knew that, and I had to get off of that tank.
Did you earn any promotions when you were over in Korea?
Yeah, I went from PFC to sergeant. Just because the lieutenant, the colonel, come up there and he said, who's in charge here? I told him the lieutenant's name, our lieutenant. He said, no, who's in charge of these men? I said, I am. He said, how can you be in charge of the men? You're a PFC. And I had two BAR men. They were corporals. He said, how can you tell a corporal what to do? I said, I tell them and they just do it. I said, that's the way it is here. So, you know, you just got to do things that you don't normally do. And he said, where is this lieutenant? And all hell broke loose. And that's how I got from PFC to sergeant.
The colonel promoted you to a sergeant because you were functioning in a leadership position.
Right on the spot.
Wow. What about you were fighting under the UN flag. Did you have any experiences with any of the other troops from other countries that were fighting on the South Korean side?
No, we never had any problem. We were stationed close to back up the Turks at one time. And
what were those troops like?
They were all prisoners. And they were taken out of prison and told them that, look, you're going to Korea, and if you don't mess up, you'll be pardoned. So they were good soldiers and mean soldiers. Because they had a knife that it had a kind of curve on it. And they would take that in with them. And if they drew that knife, they had to draw blood, even if they cut themselves. That's the way it was. So when they went out, they'd cut the ears off of the Chinese or North Koreans or whoever. They didn't fool around.
You didn't want to mess around with the Turkish troops, right?
No.
So looking back on your service, how many months were you on the front lines, do you think, there in Korea?
Probably all told, maybe three. Well, not 3 months all the time. They'd pull you back off and give you a rest. And then I had to guard a guy because he told him when he would come back for a rest, he said, I ain't going back. So I had to guard him. And I told him, I said, well, what's the sense of guarding him? Guarding him, I said, he's no good. He said, he's not going back. And he means it. Well, you got to take him anyway. And they didn't take his weapon. Well, they couldn't take his weapon away from him because you had to have a weapon constantly, all the time. So I'm guarding him, and I said, what's the deal? He said, they told me that I was going to kill myself. I said, well, are you going to shoot yourself? Yeah, he said. But he said, they think I'm going to shoot and kill myself, but I'm not. I'm going to shoot myself in the heel, and then I won't go back. But he didn't do it when I was guarding him. He did it after, and he blew his heel off.
And he got it done, huh?
And he got it done, but he got 20 years in Fort Leavenworth.
Hmm. So kind of looking back on that experience in the Korean War, what do you think are some lessons you learned from that experience?
Lesson that I've learned from?
Life lessons, or what effect do you think it had on your later life?
Oh, it had a lot of effect on me. Nightmares. Horrible. That's it.
How about everyday life? Did you develop any kind of philosophy from serving in the war that served you in a positive way when you went back?
I'm trying to think. The only thing that I had a problem on, anger management.
You were angry a lot. It was easy to get you. You were easily angered, huh?
And then just drinking.
Not much positive effect.
No. Well, the only thing you can think about is just I got out of it.
You were happy about that.
Yeah, that was foremost because I always thought I always was real conscientious about losing. I wasn't concerned about dying because if you get killed, it's over. But I didn't want to lose an arm or a leg. That was the worst thing to me that could happen.
You didn't want to be disabled?
No. Okay. And I wasn't.
Did you return to the United States on a boat?
I sure did because when they said, Bill, you can go home, I said, where's that boat?
Do you think you would have swum back if
I would have? I'd have got on a log and pedaled back.
Yeah. No typhoon this time, though.
No, I could. Oh, I just knew that ship was going down.
When you got back, did they ask you if you wanted to keep serving in the Army?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they said, we'll give you another stripe and all this stuff. I said, you're wasting your time. Let me sign on the dotted line. I'm gone.
discharged.
But then they wasn't discharged. I had to spend 7 years in a reserve.
Oh, okay.
I mean, inactive reserve.
But you were never called up again?
No.
All right. So anything else you'd like to say about this experience you had fighting to defend the country? Any other word or?
No, I would not trade the experience for $1 million, but I wouldn't take $1 million to go back.
Okay. Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it.